The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Sonia Usach-Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month we will introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. Our guest today is Omar Muhyiddin. Omar, welcome to Community Connections. We are delighted that you can join us today and share with our audience the work that you do at Duke Eye Center Vision Rehabilitation and Performance Clinic. Let me tell the audience about you. Omar was born and raised in the United States by his parents, who immigrated to the United States in the late 70s from India. Omar earned his graduate degrees in occupational therapy and public health from the University of Alabama at Birmingham. He has worked in both clinical and nonprofit eye care settings, as well as academia, doing research in the field of preventive medicine. Before pursuing his career in occupational therapy, known as OT, he worked in the public health sector for several years, serving underprivileged communities and addressing health disparities. He worked for the Minority Health and Health Disparities Research Center at the University of Alabama School of Medicine on several different grants, looking at barriers to accessing care, engaging minorities, addressing communication issues such as health, literacy, and finding ways to reach out to otherwise inaccessible populations. He now works at the Duke Eye Center in the Vision Rehabilitation and Performance Clinic, where he sees clients with age-related and acute-onset vision impairment and addresses how changes in vision affect occupational performance, challenges in activities of daily living, and instrumental activities of daily living, including community and work accessibility, functional mobility, and driving safety. He also runs an acquired brain injury clinic addressing functional visual symptoms stemming from neurological conditions. As an occupational therapist, his focus is to maximize his clients' independence and potential towards meeting their functional goals. Outside of work, he runs a nonprofit called iShine Foundation, whose mission is to create social and recreational opportunities for visually impaired youth in the Triangle region of North Carolina to participate in and explore leisure pursuits, socialize with peers, build social skills, and improve overall well-being. When Omar graduated 4 years ago, he moved to North Carolina. In his free time, which doesn't sound like he has a lot of, he enjoys being with friends. He was able to travel to a few places in the United States and Canada, as well as the Middle East and some parts of Asia. Before COVID, he had a chance to visit Iceland, which he says was pretty cool. No pun intended. His heavy schedule allows for spending spare time watching TV. A&E and the Discovery Channel are his favorites. Podcasts hold his interest, true crime documentaries in particular. Omar loves history and nature. Well, not big camping trips, but sightseeing and hiking. Welcome, Omar.
Thank you, Sonia. It's such a pleasure to be here.
So please tell us and our audience about the history of the Duke Eye Center and your goals for your clients.
Oh, certainly. So the Duke Eye Center has been around for quite some time. They established our now location back in 1973, and it has since been ranked as a top 10 eye hospital for the last 30 years running by U.S. News and Report. The Low Vision Clinic started around 1989, and, you know, our goal is to help those with vision loss, you know, lead their most independent and lives and be as safe as possible. I joined the team about 4 years ago, And I've joined quite a robust team. We've kind of grown to, a few more therapists that have joined here. We serve not only people here in North Carolina, but we see clients from all over the U.S. who travel to see us.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. People coming from all over. So how about talking a little bit and describing the situations of the folks who come to see you? For example, age-related versus acute onset and how that affects activities of daily living. And then maybe you can explain what instrumental activities of daily living are?
Absolutely. So, there's several reasons that someone may experience vision loss. Most commonly, it's due to age-related eye diseases such as macular degeneration, glaucoma, cataracts. However, some people experience vision loss for conditions such as stroke, not only strokes within the brain, but even strokes within the eyeball. Some people may experience trauma where they may have an eye injury. And so no matter how someone experiences vision loss, vision affects pretty much everything that we do throughout the day. Some of those things that it affects is what we call ADLs, or activities of daily living. Those are your basic self-care activities, which would include bathing, dressing, feeding yourself. But instrumental activities of daily living, it's a little bit more involved, or takes a little bit more planning. I kind of think about it as taking care of yourself, taking care of your home, and functioning out in the community. So this may include things like going grocery shopping, cooking your meals, reheating your meals, managing your medications. If you do go grocery shopping, how you're able to pay at the checkout, identifying currency or money, or identifying which credit card to use. Managing your health and managing medications. These are all what we consider instrumental activities of daily living. So it's kind of beyond kind of the basic needs that we have, but how we kind of function day to day.
I see. I didn't know there was a separate name for that kind of activity, but actually, if you're blind and you need to shop and you need to eat, so it's very important, I imagine, to understand how to do those activities safely.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we learn something new every day. I did anyway. So now that we know what is involved in daily living, beyond just taking a shower and brushing your teeth, what strategies do you employ to further the lives of your clients?
That's a great question. And, it really depends on the client and how much vision loss they've experienced and where they are. And it may be a while before someone comes and sees us here in our clinic. So it's possible that they've had low vision for quite a number of years and have adapted and figured out strategies on their own. But typically our number one goal is, if they have remaining vision, is to help maximize that vision to their best potential, with maybe talking about better lighting. If they're very sensitive to glare, maybe talking about special sunglasses to help manage that glare that may improve their vision. And then discussing their options for like optical devices, like magnifiers, stronger glasses, or reading glasses, to help help them see their very best. If we're not able to really make the most of the vision that they have, we would work in other ways, about like teaching them different strategies to compensate for their vision loss. So kind of working differently. You've heard that term, work smarter, not harder. A common strategy that we teach someone is, if they have a hard time seeing to get their toothpaste on their toothbrush, which requires a lot of detailed vision, color vision, because it's often white toothpaste that you're trying to put onto a white bristle of a toothbrush. And it takes a lot of depth perception and eye-hand coordination. So if any of those things are affected, it's challenging to do such a simple task such as putting toothpaste on your brush. We would instead teach people to putting the toothpaste tube in their mouth and squeezing out the right amount, and then start brushing their teeth. So that's kind of a workaround where you're able to still accomplish the task, but not requiring any vision. The last two things that I would kind of say that we do is teaching people about all the new technologies that are out there. If they're a smartphone user, what all great apps are available out there to help read things to them or turn your phone into a magnifier, different things like that. And then the very last thing would be to educate our clients on all the resources that are available to them, whether that's getting plugged into state social services, whether that's signing up for the Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, or referring people over to and letting them know about the North Carolina Reading Service.
That's very clever about putting the toothpaste in your mouth first. That's pretty clever.
Things you wouldn't think about, but it's a good workaround.
Yeah. Well, you spoke of low vision, which, not being a clinical person myself, I would say means that either you're legally blind, considered legally blind. Is that considered low vision?
No, and that is a great question. It's often a big misconception that people have. So low vision basically means this. It's not having enough vision to do the things that you want to do after having exhausted all the possibilities of eyeglasses and surgeries and treatments and medications. When all is said and done, and the doctors have done their best to help save your vision or make your vision the best it can be, if you're still having trouble to do daily activities, then you are considered low vision. Legally blind is it's a definition used to qualify you for services. It means if your vision is worse than 20 over 200 or if your visual field is less than 20 degrees in size. But it doesn't really tell us about that person and how well they function in life, because there are certainly people out there who are legally blind but are running companies and running marathons if they really wanted to. So low vision is more about how you function in the world, and legal blindness is, you know, just things that you may qualify for that require you to be legally blind, such as tax exemption programs, disability. So I don't really look at the term legally blind too often or pay too much attention to it unless someone is applying for disability. But low vision is kind of a better, more encompassing term of people who are struggling to kind of do their daily activities and don't have enough vision to do so.
I see. So what about a person who is completely blind? How do they learn what they need to learn in order to accomplish the activities of their daily lives?
Right. So someone who is totally blind, who has not even the ability to perceive light, we would try to maximize other avenues of ways they can learn. And so that the most common is going to be auditory. So if we can, try to make everything audible if they have good hearing. So instead of reading a book, listening to a book, if they have a special software on their computer called screen reading software, like JAWS, they can access their computer using that type of software. If they're a smartphone user, they may be able to use something called VoiceOver or TalkBack, depending on the type of phone that they have, so they can operate those devices. There are apps available on smartphones now that you can actually point it at print material, and it'll read things off of it for you, or it'll connect you with a sighted helper who can then visually describe out loud what the camera on your phone is being pointed at or seeing. Another way that you could compensate and maximize someone's ability to kind of function in the world without vision is to make things tactile. So identifying things by touch. So obviously the big thing that comes to mind is Braille. And while we don't do Braille instruction in our clinic, we would certainly refer people out to the proper resources if they're interested in pursuing that. Other ways that you can make things tactile would be, we call it the rubber band trick. So if there's two things in your life that you just cannot tell the difference between, whether it's your shampoo or conditioner, your toothbrush or your spouse's toothbrush, the salt shaker or the pepper shaker, you can put a rubber band around one and not the other. So as you pick up something, you know right away when you feel that rubber band that you picked up your toothbrush, the salt shaker, or the shampoo.
So necessity is the mother of invention.
It certainly is.
In these cases, the simple rubber band technique can help to differentiate the salt from the pepper, and if you use too much pepper, you know, you'll be sneezing, so you know you have the wrong one.
You don't want to make that mistake, yes.
Okay, well, that's very good to know, because it's amazing. It's amazing because sighted people take so much for granted when you break it down to toothpaste and salt and pepper. So
it's the basic things in life that kind of are make it and break it.
Yeah. So you did speak about some things in the technological world that help people, such as Braille, but that would be for reading purposes. And, of course, In our technological world, the computer rules. So you described some of the options that are available to people. A North Carolina Reading Service has a wonderful gala, and in the lobby before everybody starts eating, they have all of these devices on display. So when the galas resume, it would be a great idea for people to come to the gala and see what is available. It's quite amazing. If you don't give it much thought, all of a sudden you're thinking about this. This is really, truly amazing to help people. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you were able to describe what there is for blind and print impaired people.
And when it comes to technology, Sonia, there's always something new and something coming down the pipeline. So just because you may have known about certain things a couple of years ago, it doesn't mean that there's not new software and new technologies out there on the market today or coming out in the near future. So technology is probably one of the best things that's happened to the blind and visually impaired community in the last 10, 15 years, just how much it's grown. I'm really looking forward to seeing what all these companies and developers come up with.
That's fabulous. So now that we've spoken about the actual person who has lost their sight or has low vision, I'd like to know what the role of the family and friends play in the process of being a support, being a guide to a newly blind person to help them adjust. And then if that person is in your family, you need to adjust. So how does that work?
You're right. So a lot of times people will use the term caregiver, but I'd rather use the term care partner. You know, our goal is to help someone with vision loss still remain independent and maximize what they're able to do throughout the day and do as much for themselves as they possibly can. So having good social support in place and having family members and friends or whoever you may be living with understand your needs and, support you in ways that would keep you safe and independent. I'll give you an example. You know, if you're living with a roommate, a spouse, children, say someone opens a cabinet door and doesn't close it, or they go to load the dishwasher and they leave the dishwasher door open and they don't close it. It's important to educate people in kind of your immediate environment about, you know, creating a safe environment for you if you have vision loss. And other ways that your support members or family members may help you is with looking at how you're going to delegate tasks moving forward. It's possible that maybe you were the big cook in the family for several years, but now you may have issues with safety, with cooking, whether you don't feel comfortable handling a knife or reaching into a hot oven or cooking on an open flame. So maybe you delegate that role or that task to someone else. A lot of times vision will impact your eligibility for driving, so it's important to have those conversations and make sure that the friends and family members know that if you're unable to drive or drive safely or not drive at nighttime, for instance, that they may need to help take over those responsibilities and help you get to and from places as needed.
So those are all great suggestions. And those are figured out by the family, but is there help? Is there a class for a family member? So I'm a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And if a mother has a 3 or 4 year old that had some sort of accident and that child lost his vision.
Right.
How does the mother adjust? How does she learn? Because her instinct would be to help, but too much help is not good for the person. right, for the person who has lost their vision, so that they can remain independent, which is a major goal, that, as you described it. So how do you help a mother?
Right. So, it, like you said, it really depends on where someone is in life, and then you know, where they are on their vision loss journey. So maybe early on they need a little bit more support, but then over time, learning to kind of ease up or give someone more independence. But in terms of social supports and support structures out there, there are certainly support groups online, such as on Facebook. Here in North Carolina, particularly in Durham, we do have a support group called the Vision Insight Connect Group for someone who's experiencing vision loss. And they're certainly welcome to bring in friends and family members, usually just one. But it has been virtual for this past year, of course, with the pandemic.
Yes.
But they were meeting once a month, and they still continue to meet over the phone. But that's another great way of kind of getting together and learning from others who are kind of in similar shoes and learning how they've not only adapted for themselves, but also helped cope with vision loss, because vision loss can affect everybody in a family, you know, and not just the person who has the vision loss, but, you know, maybe the spouse who now has to take over different roles, or the mother who has to kind of be more of an advocate for her child out in the community or in the school system. So there are support groups out there. There are different support structures, but certainly there could be more.
Oh,
and then,
okay,
of course, visiting our clinic, we would help kind of guide you to the right things and have those conversations. And we actually also have a great social worker on our team who is available.
Oh, that's important. You mentioned the pandemic. So let me ask you, during the pandemic, how were you able to briefly tell us, meet the needs of your clients?
Right. So even though people may not consider our services as essential, meaning that what we're doing is not, you know, no one's going to die or pass away of low vision, we do think for ourselves that what we do is so important to someone's independence and safety, to where we decided as a team to not shut down, such as other elective practices. So we never shut down, Sonia.
Oh.
We continue to see patients through the pandemic. We, of course, had to modify our schedules and structures so we could see less people in the day, so our waiting rooms were not crowded, and that we had the time to clean up equipment and furniture in between patients. But we knew that if we had stopped services or taken a hiatus during the pandemic, then a lot of people would fall through the cracks or struggle with daily things. So we've done our best to kind of help manage and continue to see people. But having resources and having good social support is really important during the pandemic. Even people in, you know, say, assisted living facilities, they weren't able to participate in, like, you know, group activities. So making sure that they had resources, whether it's, like, you know, like a large print crossword puzzle or something to keep themselves entertained and occupied during this time.
Great. I'm glad to hear that, you know, you kept on. So now I'd like to ask you about what seems to be your personal baby, the EyeShine Foundation, Shine Foundation, because I want to know how you came to develop this, and tell us a little bit about the mission.
Yeah, so I can't take all the credit. So I assumed the position of president about 3 years ago. EyeShine Foundation was created by Kim Hudson, who's a teacher for the visually impaired here in North Carolina. She runs her own company. So EyeShine Foundation is a nonprofit for visually impaired youth, K through 12, in the Triangle region of North Carolina, but we've done a lot of virtual events this past year. So we've opened our invitations, virtual invitations, to a larger reach since we were able to do so. But our goal, our mission, is to create something in terms of an activity or an event every month, so visually impaired youth can come together, network, make friends, and do something fun and recreational. You know, not every child who has of visual impairment goes to the State School for the Blind, which would be Governor Moorhead out in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. It's oftentimes that maybe that child is the only one in their entire school that has a vision impairment, and they don't have a chance to connect with other kids like themselves. So we wanted to, A, kind of create an opportunity and a platform for other kids to get together and meet in person and make friends. We also know that when you have a visual impairment, it makes it more challenging to participate in physical activities, skating, playing basketball. And so a lot of times kids may resort to more sedentary activities such as, you know, video gaming or playing on their phones. But we understand the importance of physical activity to health and wellness. And so if we can create opportunities for kids in a safe way for them to explore what they can and cannot do and build their confidence, that's our main goal. So things that we've done in the past, we've gone horseback riding. We actually went ice skating, not last weekend, but the weekend before last. We're going to a swimming event in a few weeks. Hopefully the pandemic doesn't rear its ugly head again and put a kibosh on our activities. But
I was going to say, you sound excited about this because this is a positive atmosphere for kids. And absolutely, that's really important since they miss school so much.
So important that you mentioned with a lot of kids being virtual, they've lost even more connection from even their sighted peers. So it's really important that we have switched to at least doing virtual events, like virtual hangouts and things in this past year. But we hope to do more in-person things moving forward if this pandemic allows.
I'm rooting for you. So before we run out of time, I would like you to please tell us about the phone number for people to be able to get in touch with the Duke Center and a website.
Sure. So our website is going to be DukeEyeCenter.org. However, I would encourage you to just reach me on my office number, which is 919-681-9071. And I'll repeat that, 919-681-9071. We can talk about kind of your goals and what you're looking for and if you need to come see occupational therapy directly or if you would benefit from maybe seeing our low vision optometrist in clinic. Of course, we would talk to you about how to get scheduled and if we need any medical notes from your other doctors and then referrals. So all those little...
Well, we're just about out of time. I just want to mention that in October, you are going to be a participant in a North Carolina Reading Service webinar. So for all of those who have listened to this show and love what Omar has described, please tune into the webinar. And I wish you good luck on the webinar. I'm sure that you'll have an opportunity to expand on all the things that you shared with us today. You've been a most charming and informative guest, and thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Sonia.
Well, we've run out of time for this month's episode of Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Sonia Usach-Kuhn for the North Carolina Reading Service. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.